Neoliberal Policies and Their Effects on Education Systems, an investigative podcast by ABC Journalism. There's only two parties who advocate for neoliberalism. One is your neighbour who has a warm heart and good intentions for the children of Australia but doesn't really understand the full concept. The other is think tank money providers who utilise the ideology for personal gain. We'll help you understand the concept and its innate flaws, but to begin unpacking this tricky topic, we need our listeners to touch up on their background knowledge.
Neoliberalism is a powerful and complex economic, political, and cultural system that transfers market values into all aspects of life. Neoliberalism operates on rationality and governmentality that promotes competition, privatization, and personal responsibility.
The root of the idea is that factors of production, or in our case, educational establishments, get paid what they are worth. It is accomplished through a supply and demand process in the context of a free market. What does this mean for education? Neoliberalism in Australian education came about in the 1990s, where its advocates proposed that schools would benefit from a marketisation or privatisation approach, like a business scenario. Schools sell their products, their education, to consumers, who are the parents and students, and this would result in a big win-win. Parents are drawn to the freedom of choice, funds are allocated as the market demands them, educators are held accountable, which supposedly drives growth in results. What this means for education systems, though, is that schools are being privatised and marketed as businesses and forced to compete with each other for consumers, just like businesses do. But schools can't benefit from emulating the operations of businesses because businesses rely on cost-cutting for profit maximisation. The most significant costs associated with education are labour for teaching and support staff, and when we take this away, we get larger class sizes, less one-on-one time, further absence of much-needed support, and a crucial decline in quality resources. Nevertheless, the consumers compare the market on their only measure, and that measure is performance data that's made publicly available on the MySchool website. This testing is based on student performance that is measured and compared by easily quantifiable academic measures of key curriculum areas, like literacy and numeracy.
An instrumentalist approach.
But the problem is that it doesn't consider all the learning students do that can never be measured, quantified, weighed, and accounted for. And this creates a spiral of disadvantage for many education systems and their individual students. The private and independent schools attract more buyers because their data suggests higher performance in comparison to public schools. The likely reason that their data indicates this is because they are allowed to be selective of their students. Public schools, on the other hand, struggle in this business model because they have to operate in low SES areas, and they have to take everyone, including students with disabilities, who don't speak English, who have behavioural issues, or who are homeless and deprived of basic physiological needs.
It's easy to get high test scores when the students are ready, willing, and able to learn.
This is a profound example of residualization as a direct and damaging result of neoliberal policies.
But the problem with this test score data is that it doesn't show individualized improvement. It shows the product rather than the process, and when the data is made publicly available, parents are likely to overlook the fact that the schools who started from the bottom, despite significant advances, are still publicly identified as low performing.
Every parent wants the best for their kids, and that includes the education they receive. It's a decision all parents, including me, will make or have made at some stage.
Yep, that's right, he hit the nail on the head. Parents do want the best for their child, and so they opt to send them to these schools. These schools have more fee-paying consumers, so they make higher profits. The investors want to put their money into successful, high-performing establishments. That's business. The higher profits fund more resources, and the public schools who are surviving on government funding alone with minimal resources, large class sizes, and lower performing students are forced to push through this cycle of disadvantage. But the data is needed to market the schools, and so we find ourselves in a testing culture.
And let's test and measure more carefully. And let's not really give any thought to how relevant it is to life, but let's just put the pressure on our schools to catch up with South Korea and Singapore on these standardized test measures. And the results, I think you all know, have been catastrophic.
The teachers in the schools, who are at the front line of this vicious cycle, are under immense pressure from the people at the top to drive test results upward, and as a result are reportedly spending more time teaching for testing than teaching for learning. Gabby Stroud wrote that she spent more time as an assessor, examiner, and data collector, and in her final months before leaving teaching, she became scared of a workload that was in no way related to teaching. She felt that the value of great teachers who work to build individualized relationships, met learners at their point of need, who understood that there is in fact nothing standard about the nature of teaching and learning, was being overlooked by the neoliberal standardized mechanical approach to education. These teachers are exhausted, and the students are becoming disengaged with learning. Sir Ken Robinson emphasised that a noticeable effect of this current culture has been to deprofessionalise teachers, to take away their autonomy and flexibility, to revoke their creativity and to undermine their capability to mentor, stimulate, provoke and engage students in learning, and replace this art with a rigid delivery system of information that contributes to neoliberal values of human capital.
Catherine Donoghue, a teacher who, like Gabby Stroud, also broke up with teaching, joins us now. Thanks for joining us today, Kath. We've talked a lot about the ascendancy of neoliberal market ideologies and how this has shifted the priorities of schools and their systems of management. And I was listening to a podcast earlier about a public school who has one particular student who needed handrails in place around the school so that she could physically access her classrooms. And due to the high stakes competition, the school needed to prioritise architecture and landscaping at the front of the school in order to attract more enrolments. And this poor girl, she couldn't actually be in her designated classroom. And this is the cost of privatisation and the marketisation of schools. Have you encountered anything like this in your career?
Yes, I definitely have, and it's really sad where the schools prioritise the aesthetic elements to attract potential enrolments rather than dedicating the funding to much needed support. It's really disappointing that the school's gone this way.
Yeah, it is, exactly. Gabby Stroud writes that there's something sinister happening to this profession that she once loved, and it breaks her heart and it burnt her out. And she says that we just don't trust our teachers anymore. Can you relate to Gabby Stroud's view of how teaching has evolved in such a detrimental way?
Yes, I definitely have. You're constantly feeling under pressure. There's more pressure from parents, there's more pressure from even your colleagues and also your principal and deputies. You feel like no matter what you do, you're not good enough, you're not doing enough, and it doesn't matter how many hours at night you spend doing, preparing work and doing different things to help the day run smoother, you feel like it's never good enough.
Do you think... Some people say now that teaching is just about delivering information to the students and teaching to test and ticking boxes. Do you think that teaching should be about ticking boxes and delivering information?
Oh, definitely not. We need kids that are risk takers. We need them to be resilient. We need them to be more creative. We need them to be independent.
Yeah.
But this sort of environment sets them up so it's very controlling and it doesn't allow them to think for themselves.
And so in place of curiosity, we have compliance.
And if you look at the characteristics you see in every five-year-old, inquisitive, bold, creative, totally comfortable with taking risk and failing, you are actively in schools, discouraging, eliminating those types of characteristics and traits.
And as our podcast draws to a conclusion, we come to terms with the fact that we don't have the answer to effective resource allocation and school management and all that's associated with driving improvements in our education system. But we can conclude with the assertion that understanding of and critical engagement with this topic is so critical to the possible evolution. We are the future teachers of this country. We will be at the forefront of nurturing these children's appreciation for learning, and so it is of the utmost importance that we don't back down to these biggest entities, and instead we stand up for what we believe in and what we know to be imperative in an equitable and effectual learning journey for all students and all of their wonderful differences. Education should be about fostering an individual identity, not a measure of economic value.